The next topic, Dryden, the father of English criticism. Introduction. It was no less exciting a critic than Dr. Johnson who decorated Dryden with the medal of fatherhood of English criticism. Dryden, he wrote, may be properly considered as the father of English criticism as the writer who first taught us to determine upon the principle of merit of composition. Dr. Johnson's tribute to Dryden should not be allowed to imply that no literary criticism exists in England before Dryden. Some literary criticism did exist before him, but much of it was not worth the name. In general, English literary criticism before Dryden was patchy, ill-organized, cursory, perfunctory, ill-digested, and heavily leaning an ancient Greek and Roman, and more recent Italian and French criticism. It had no identity or even life of its own. Moreover, an overwhelming proportion of it was criticism to the legislative and little of it that of the descriptive kind. Dryden involved an articulated and impressive body of critical principle for practical literary appreciation and afford good example of description criticism himself. It was said of Augustus that he found Rome Greek and left in marble. Sainsbury averred that Dryden's contribution to English poetry was the same as Augustus' contribution to Rome. With still more justice, we could say that Dryden found English literary criticism Greek and left it marble. Dryden's critical work. Dryden was truly a versatile man of letters. He was a playwright, both tragic and comic, a vigorous and fluent prose writer, justifiably the father of modern English prose, a great poet, one of the best satiric poets of England and so far, a verse translator and of course, a great literary critic. His literary criticism make a pretty sizable volume. Much of it, however, is informal, occasional, self-vindicating, and as F. R. Lewis turns in it in his appreciation, Dr. Johnson as a critic in Secretary's number dated Dryden wrote only one formal critical work of famous essay of dramatic poesy. The rest of his critical work consists of three classical lives, Plutarch, Polybius, and Lucian. As many as 25 critical prefaces to his own works, and a few more prefaces to the work of his contemporaries. These critical prefaces are so many builds for as well as apologies for the writing to which they are prefixed. In his critical work, Dryden deal as the occasion arise with most literary question, which were the burning issue of his day, as also some fundamental problem of literary creation, apprehension, and appreciation, which are as important today as they were at the very incarnation of literature. He deals satisfactorily or otherwise with such issues as the process of literary creation, the permissibility or otherwise of tragicomedy, the three unities, the Daniel Campion controversy over rhyme versus blank verse, the nature and function of comedy, tragedy, and poetry in general in function, and the taste of good satire, and many others. Here is indeed, to steal a phrase from him, God's plenty. No English literary critic before Dryden had been so vast in range or settling in quality. Dryden, the father of English descriptive criticism. Out of this God's plenty, the Dryden's critical works, perhaps the most valuable passages are those which constitute descriptive criticism. George Watson, in his excellent work of literary critic, divided literary criticism into three broad categories listed below. First, legislative criticism, including books of rhetoric. Such criticism claim to teach the poet how to write and write better. Thus, it is meant for the writer and not the reader of poetry. Such criticism flourished before Dryden, who broke new ground. Second, theoretical criticism of literary aesthetics. Such criticism had also become almost a defunct force. Today, it has come back with a vengeance in the shape of various literary theories. Third, descriptive criticism or analysis of exciting literary works. This, says Watson in a noted comma, is the youngest of the three forms, by far the most voluminous and the only one which today possesses any life and vigor of its own. Whether or not Dryden is the father of English criticism, it is fair enough to agree with Watson that, in inverted comma, he is clearly the founder of descriptive criticism in English. Not comma close. All English literary critic before him, such as Gascoigne, Puttenham, Sidney, and Ben Jonson, were critic of the legislative or theoretical kind. None of them concerned himself with given literary work or interpretation or an appreciation, of course. Now and then, Dryden's preceders did say good or bad thing about this or that writer or this or that literary composition. For instance, Sidney praised Shakespeare and commented on his contemporaries. However, such stray comments were not grounded on any careful formulated principle of appreciation. Audience, says Dr. Johnson, applauded by instincts and poet perhaps often pleased by chance. Dryden was, to repeat Dr. Johnson's word in inverted comma, the writer who first taught us to determine upon principle the merit of composition. Not comma close. Dryden practiced what he taught. He was the first in England to attempt extant and descriptive criticism. Thus, he established a new tradition and did a signal service to literary criticism. Watson says, in inverted comma, the modern preoccupation with literary analysis emerged patchily but unmistakably in his prejudices and partition interest in his own plays and poems. In inverted comma closed. It is to be noted that every one of Dryden's preface to his own work is of the nature of an apologia, meant to defend in advance the poet's reputation by attempting to answer the possible objection likely to rise. Such self-justification leads him often the analysis of his creative work and the discussion of principle and determine the merit of composition. Dryden's important descriptive criticism. Dryden's very first critical essay, the dedicatory letter to his first published play, The Revival Ladies, 1664, contained the germ of descriptive criticism. However, the first critical analysis of literary work in English was the examen of Ben Jonson comedy, The Silent Woman, embedded in Dryden's only formal work of criticism. The essay of dramatic poesy, with examen in Watson's word, is the earliest substantial example of descriptive criticism in the language. Dryden selects The Silent Woman as the pattern of a perfect play of this play. Dryden proposes to make a short examen according to those rules which the French observe. The intrinsic merit of the examen, unlike the historical, is very limited. It is not only crude but imprecise, so much so that in Watson's word, it would not be acceptable as pass work in any modern school of English. When facts do not suit his conclusions, Dryden has little scruple in misrepresenting them. For example, he says that the action of play lies all within the compass of two houses, when the fact is that there are three houses and a lane. In spite of such patent inaccuracies, the examen is, in the words of David Desai in inverted comma, a technical achievement of a high order and probably the first of its kind in English. Comma closed. Dryden's criticism of Shakespeare Beaumont and Fletcher and Chaucer is much more substantial than this examen. His aggressive nationalism distorts to some extent his appreciation of English writer. However, he has quite a few illuminative remarks to make. As regards Shakespeare, we find Dryden strangely cowed down by the worthless and vituperative criticism of his contemporary Rhymer, but his appreciation of Chaucer's Canterbury Tales is superb and eminently readable even today. His very acute analysis of Chaucer's characterization in his preface of the fable remains in the world of acting in English literary criticism, 17th and 18th century, in inverted commas, something rare and the permanent value in English criticism, inverted commas, close. Dryden's liberalism, scepticism, dynamism, and probabilism. As a literary critic, Dryden was certainly influenced by ancient Greek and Roman critics such as Aristotle, Longinus, and Horace, and later Latin and contemporary French critics such as Raffin and Bolelli. But this influence did not go beyond a limit. The age in which he lived accepted his influence in all spheres and literature, and Dryden was not isolationist enough to escape the spirit of the age. However, his fundamental liberalism, scepticism, dynamism, and probabilism, not to speak of his admirable sanity and common sense, helped him to fight quite a few dogmas and conventions imported from abroad. The French neoclassicists of his age stuck of their Aristotelian gun with tenacity. While paying due respect to Aristotle, Dryden refused to swear by his name. He demolished, for example, the formidable trinity of so-called three unities, the prejudice against tragicomedy, and the rigorous enforcement of the principle of decorum. He was not a hidebound neo-Aristotelian like his contemporary Rhymer, who denounced Shakespeare for his refusal to fall in line with principle of Aristotle. Dryden seems to have had belief like Longinus and Romantics in inspiration and the inborn creative power of the poet. He favored the romantic extravagance of Shakespeare and candidly criticized ancient Roman and contemporary French drama, which strictly followed all the rules. Of course, he favored regularity and deference to some basic rule of composition, but unlike, says Rhymer, he refused to worship these rules and to consider them a substitute for a real inspiration and intensity of expression. The bit and the bridle are necessary, but there has to be a host first. Now, what I beseech thee, ask he, is more easy than to write a regular French play, or more difficult than write an irregular English one, like those of Fletcher or of Shakespeare. Dryden's intellectual scepticism, which Louis I. Bradwald stresses in intellectual milieu of John Dryden, was greatly responsible for his liberal and unorthodox outlook. His probabilism as a literary critic is both his strength and weakness. While discussing an issue, he argues very often from both the side and the leaf of conclusion hanging in the air. In the essay of dramatic poesy for intense, he compares ancient and modern drama, Elizabethan playwright of his country and French playwright of his own age, and rhyme and blank verse. But these issues are discussed by four interlocutors, Dryden, though very easily recognizable in Neander, is apparently at least non-committal. His somersault on the question of the relative merit of rhyme and blank verse may be variously quoted as a time-serving prick or as an example of his dynamism, but the undeniable fact remains that as a literary critic, he is flexible enough to keep the issue open. Watson remarked, Dryden's whole career as a critic is permeated by what me might tactfully call his sense and occasion, Phrynism or philosophical skepticism, liberated him from the tyranny of truth. And further, Dryden is remarkable as a critic not only for the casual ease with which he contradicts himself, but for the care he takes in advance to ensure that there will not be much in future to contradict. Dryden's historic sense. Dryden's impatience with classical rule arose mainly from his abundant historic sense. He was the first critic who emphasized the dynamic character of literature. Literature, according to him, is expressive of the genius of a nation and is necessarily keep pace with the times. It is simply not possible to formulate a body of rules applicable to literatures of various nations in various ages. He affirmed that what was liked by ancient Greeks in would not satisfy an English audience . He refused to believe that ancient Greek and Romans were model for all time and all in all languages. He was not therefore caught down by the authority of Aristotle. He declared it is not enough that Aristotle he had said so, for Aristotle drew his models of tragedy from Sophocles and Euripides, and if he had seen others might have changed his mind. His outspoken assertion comes partly from Dryden's cultural patriotism, but partly from his keen historic sense. Dryden, the father of comparative criticism. Commenting upon Dryden's examen of the silent woman in the essay of dramatic poesy, Watson says, the chief trump of the examen lies in its attempt at the comparative criticism, in its balancing of the qualities of English drama against those of the French. It is undeniable the first example of such criticism in English and among the very earliest in any modern language. Dryden sees Scott James open a new field of comparative criticism. In the course of his critical work, Dryden critically compares Shakespeare and Ben Jonson, Chaucer and Ovid, Chaucer and Boccaccio, Horace and Juvenal, and ancient and modern drama, contemporary French and English drama, Elizabethan and Restoration drama, rhyme and blank verse as vehicle of drama, and so on. His methods of comparative criticism is very rewarding and illuminating and a favorite instrument of modern critics. The topic, Dryden, the father of English criticism, over, and the chapter 4 is also over.